independence. More than 200 years of European influence, sadly, had all but destroyed the original Polynesian culture. European sailors, explorers, and eventually tourists brought alcohol, smallpox, venereal diseases, and concrete hotel complexes. Chinese merchants established shops in Papeete, which became a thriving commercial city with an international airport. During the latter stages of the 20th century, the French government even made Tahiti its administrative center for the nuclear bomb tests it conducted in the South Pacific. Independence lessened the influence of Europeans and Chinese, but could not undo the cultural transformations of more than three centuries. Tahitians remained proud of their cultural heritage, but they wore T-shirts and listened to pop music on their clip-on phones, just like people all over the world. Yet the image of Tahiti as an unspoiled tropical paradise remained in the minds of people everywhere. So Tahiti became the unanimous choice to locate the Global Conference on Peace and Progress. In addition to planning the details of the conference, Sister Angelique had the additional task of setting up a nuclear warhead in a test range in New Mexico, not far from the Alamogordo site where the first atomic bomb had been detonated more than a century and a half earlier. The purpose of the setup was the ritual dismantling of the bomb before the eyes of the leaders of the world's nuclear powers, the United States, Greater Iran, and China. Tavalera thought of asking Stoner if he knew of any other nuclear weapons programs, but he was still too angry to try to make contact with the Star Voyager. Yet that night, in the quiet of his own apartment, Stoner appeared anyway. Suddenly he was standing in front of Tavalera in the apartment's living room, looking gravely at him with his gray eyes. "For what it's worth," Stoner said without preamble, "I've spoken with Holly again and tried to explain what's going on here. You can talk to her yourself if you like." "I like," Tavalera replied sullenly. "All right. After we've finished our business."
"Real time?"
Shaking his head, Stoner replied, "I'm afraid not. I can't do the impossible."
"Yeah."
Tavalera sat down on the sofa, not trusting his emotions enough to say anything more. "I see that your conference is coming along well enough," Stoner said, taking the armchair facing the sofa.
"Hey, it's not my conference. The whole thing is Angelique's idea."
Stoner nodded and stretched his long legs out before the coffee table. Tavalera saw that he was wearing old-fashioned cowboy boots, plain brown and unadorned.
"I think we ought to know if anybody else is building nukes," he said guardedly.
"The Russians still have a small cache of missiles with nuclear warheads left over from the old days, before the final Middle East war," Stoner said. "The warheads have degraded seriously, and the missiles are rusting away in their silos. They're not usable. The Kremlin leaders keep them more as a symbol of their former power than anything else."
"Could they be fixed up, though?" Tavalera asked. "Made usable?"
Nodding, Stoner replied, "It would take a serious effort. The Russians aren't going to start a nuclear war. They know better. They've seen what the fallout from the Middle East did to the Ukraine and Kazakhstan."
"So it's the U.S., Iran, and China?"
"Yes."
Tavalera clasped his hands together.
"She's setting up a nuke warhead in New Mexico near Alamogordo.
In secret."
Stoner said nothing.
"They're going to dismantle it as a show of goodwill."
"In front of the Chinese and Iranian leaders?"
"That's right."
"Good." Silence stretched between them awkwardly. At last, Stoner asked, "It was your idea to place the conference on Tahiti?"
"Yeah. I figured it was sort of neutral territory."
"Interesting," said Stoner. "In my earlier life, we set up our project for contacting the alien starship on Kwajalein. That's an atoll in the Central Pacific."
"Uh-huh."
"Parallels," Stoner muttered. "The two world lines almost merged together, but not quite."
"You said you'd let me talk with Holly."
Nodding again, Stoner replied, "Yes, you've earned that much." Chapter 10. It was awkward, trying to hold a conversation with a two-hour lag between "How are you?" and "I'm fine." But once Stoner had left his apartment, Tavalera's phone chimed, and there was Holly on his wall screen, bright and pert and obviously happy to see him.
"This is real," Tavalera said to himself. "I'm really talking to her, I think."
He poured out his heart to Holly, telling her everything, including Stoner's deception.
Once he'd run out of words, he waited, fidgeting in his apartment for nearly 2 hours before the phone chimed again.
"He tricked you," were her first words to him. "Why? What's he up to?"
Holly's expressive face went from an annoyed frown to a happy grin.
"Okay, never mind. We're talking, and it's so great to see you, Raoul, hear your voice. I want to make arrangements to bring you here to the habitat soon as we can. I don't like the idea that those nutcases are going to start throwing nukes at each other. I'll send an appeal to the United Nations and ask to get you and your mother sent here."
On and on Holly talked, saying just about what she'd said in the faked conversations that Stoner had rigged. "He knows how she thinks," Tavallera told himself as he listened to Holly, watched her face, felt the warmth of her presence even though they were separated by a billion kilometers. "He must have dug that out of my mind, my memories of her.
And if that doesn't work, I'll come back there myself and pry you loose with a crowbar if I have to."
Tavallera grinned at her. "That's my Holly," he thought. "She loves me. She wants me with her. She still loves me." Tavallera was whistling as he entered his office the next morning. Angelique heard him through the thin wall that separated their offices. "He's happy," she thought. She wished she could be happy, too. Most of the conference arrangements had been set. The public announcement would be made on worldwide news broadcasts in a few days. The secret meeting in New Mexico, though, was another matter altogether. Angelique had to get the chiefs of state of Greater Iran, China, and the United States away from the public conference in Tahiti and whisk them to New Mexico to witness the ritual dismantling of an American hydrogen bomb. The news media could know nothing of this. That wasn't too difficult. The national governments and religious movements behind them had tight control of the news media. The tricky part was to make certain that Stoner would be there, in the precisely right spot for the hydrogen bomb's accidental explosion to destroy him. Besides that, Archbishop Overmyer was having some fresh thoughts of his own. He called Angelique into his office that morning for her regular progress report.
"We need a reliable man to detonate the bomb," the Archbishop said, perspiring as he sat behind his desk, despite the office's frosty temperature.
Angelique thought he looked worse than usual, more tired, his eyes bloodshot, his hands trembling slightly. "He's anxious about this meeting," she told herself. "He's working harder than usual, and it's taking a toll on his health." Wondering what his blood pressure might be, Angelique thought that the stress of the conference just might kill the Archbishop and save her the trouble of removing him.
"I'm searching for a suitable volunteer, Your Eminence," she said. "It's a bit tricky. The person must be technically knowledgeable, yet willing to accept holy martyrdom."
Overmyer closed his reddened eyes briefly, then asked,
"Do you mean that no one with technical qualifications has the spiritual willingness to become a martyr?"
"I'm sure there is someone," Angelique replied. "It's just that we haven't found him yet. Or her."
"Her? A woman?"
Suppressing the bitter smile that played on the corners of her lips, Angelique said,
"There are women who are trained nuclear technicians, Your Eminence."
The Archbishop looked somewhat surprised.
"Are there? I wouldn't think women were interested in such things."
Angelique said nothing.
"How far from the explosion will I be?" Overmyer asked.
That's what's worrying him, Angelique realized. "More than 10 kilometers, Your Eminence. In a concrete shelter that's blast-proofed and hardened against the radiation pulse from the bomb."
"And the Iranian and Chinese leaders will be with me?"
"Yes, Your Eminence. And the President, of course. You will watch the dismantling and the accident over a television link."
"Very good."
Archbishop Overmyer squeezed his narrow eyes shut again, then said,
"I've been discussing this with that Melillo person."
"The President's chief of staff?"
"Yes," said the Archbishop with obvious distaste. "An unpleasant man. Demanding. Impatient."
"He seems hard-driving," Angelique agreed.
"He's not a believer. Not one of us. Brought up as a Catholic, I'm certain."
"Most likely," she murmured.
"But he's been giving this matter considerable thought," Overmyer conceded as he pulled himself up straighter in his high-backed chair. "He thinks we should launch preemptive strikes at the Iranian and Chinese nuclear facilities."